The Invisible Fiend Series, Book 1, Mr. Mumbles, written by Barry Hutchison and produced by Be Here.
There are two churches in our village. One of them is small and white and looks just like a normal house, except with a rainbow painted right across one side. The other is a big, old-fashioned spooky place with a graveyard at the back and a spire that looks like it might topple over at any minute. One of them is called St. Mary's and the other is the Church of the Friendship Fellowship. No prizes for guessing which is which. Unfortunately, the creepy one with the graveyard was closest to the garage, and Amina decided it would be a good idea to go hide there in case Mr. Mumbles came after us again. "Why a church?" I asked.
"Because it's close,"
she replied.
"And because there's not a whole lot else open right now."
I didn't argue. I vaguely remembered reading somewhere that people used to hide out in churches for safety and protection. Right now, the idea of being protected sounded pretty good. The heavy wooden doors creaked loudly as we pushed them open. I should have expected it. Just once tonight, I'd have liked something to not sound all ominous and evil. What was it with people? Didn't anyone oil their hinges anymore? The big doors led into a low-roofed room and a second, smaller doorway. Blue paint flaked from the walls, peeling off in large, jaggy strips, exposing the bare plaster beneath. The place smelled exactly like the attic at home, and for a moment, the stench of damp triggered the first stirrings of panic, before I was able to swallow it back down. I'd never been in a church before. Mum didn't believe in any of that nonsense. But from everything I'd heard about them, I was expecting something a bit more grand and impressive. This was just like a corridor. A narrow space with a tatty rug on the floor and a corkboard on one side with some boring-looking notices pinned to it. "It's like a shed or something," I muttered. Then Amina stepped past me and pulled open the second set of doors. At once, I realised my mistake. A long aisle of polished wood shone all the way from the entrance to an imposing statue of a giant Jesus on the cross. Around the hall, the walls curved up and up until they became the thick oak beams of a vast, ornate ceiling. From the ceiling hung two huge chandeliers, which looked like they'd been made to hold candles, but which were now rigged up with dozens of little light bulbs. Their soft white glow cast a strange, almost magical sheen over the rows and rows of wooden pews. In all directions, stained glass saints looked lovingly down from the windows, watching over the congregation from worlds away. Right now, though, the congregation consisted of Amina, me, and not another living soul.
"You must have a really impressive shed,"
she whistled, stepping into the church. Her footsteps echoed on the wooden floor, and the sound seemed to bounce all the way around the room. "Pretty amazing, eh?" I said, my voice hushed.
"Not too shabby,"
she admitted, quietly.
"But why are you whispering?"
"I don't know," I shrugged, still keeping the noise down. "Aren't you supposed to whisper in churches? Isn't that like a rule or something?"
"I think that's libraries."
"Oh, yeah." We were still speaking in hushed tones, neither one of us daring to be the first to raise our voices.
"I really want to shout,"
Amina said. She giggled nervously. It was the first girly thing I'd seen her do.
"Like, properly shout, just to see what happens."
"Don't! You'll get us chucked out."
"By who? There's no one here but us and the big Jay over there.
She glanced across at the enormous statue.
And I can't see him grassing us up.
Look, just don't, will you? I pleaded. I wasn't used to churches, and they made me uneasy. With everything I'd been through already tonight, I didn't know if my nerves could take any more strain.
Fine, I won't.
Amina sighed.
But only if we stop whispering.
Okay, I agreed, still hushed. Just don't shout.
Right then,
she said, in something closer to her normal volume.
There, I've done it. Your turn.
What should I say? I asked, quietly.
It doesn't matter, just say anything.
Anything, I said. My voice sounded stupidly loud in the silence of the church hall.
There. Wasn't so bad, was it?
I shrugged. It still felt wrong to be speaking out loud in a church, but then I figured that people sang hymns and stuff there, so talking was probably allowed too. I also had a vague memory of a man who came to visit our school 2 or 3 times a year. He wore a black suit and a white dog collar and spoke as if everyone else in the world was deaf. If he was allowed in a church, then speaking in a normal voice couldn't possibly be against the rules. Amina nodded and smiled as she scraped her hair away from her face and tied it back. It was the first time I'd been able to look at her properly since she'd shown up. To begin with, I'd thought she was older than me, but now I wasn't so sure. A little taller, yes, but maybe my age. Her skin was pale brown, like coffee with milk in. She was skinny, a little bit too skinny to be healthy, and I wondered where she'd found the strength to hit Mr. Mumble so hard with my bat earlier in the night. Adrenaline, I guessed. Her clothes were shades of black and grey, and looked like they'd been slept in. But so did mine right now, so I couldn't exactly blame her for that. Either her feet were ridiculously out of proportion to the rest of her body, or the shabby black boots she wore were a good few sizes too big. Either way, I imagined getting a kick from one of them would be like being booted by a horse. I watched her set off to explore the church. Living in the middle of nowhere, I didn't get to meet a lot of people. It was usually the same faces saying the same things, day after day after day. Amina was different. Not just because she was new, but because she was, well, just different. I'd never met anyone like her before. I doubted there was anyone else quite like her to meet. It was lucky she'd shown up when she had. Another one of tonight's coincidences that I didn't want to start questioning too much. That said, though, there was something about her. Something about the way she was taking most of the weirdness in her stride, which made me wonder if...
Hey, check these out!
She called, waving at me from the closest corner of the hall and derailing my train of thought. I jogged across and found her standing stock still, pretending to be part of the full-size nativity scene which had been set out in the corner nearest the door. She stood there, hands clasped together, between the three wise men and the shepherds, and just behind a donkey with an ear broken off. "You make a good angel," I told her. Instantly a blush stung at my cheeks. That sounded like a corny chat-up line. I mean, I didn't...
"I'd make a terrible angel,"
she replied, choosing not to comment on my remark.
"Feathers freak me out."
Her whole body convulsed at the thought of them. Nope, I definitely never met anyone like Amina before. When her shuddering had passed, she rapped her knuckles on the donkey's ribcage.
"What do you think of this baby?"
"It's... a donkey?"
"It's not just a donkey, kiddo. It's a heavy donkey."
I looked from the statue of the animal to Amina and back again. She was nodding like she was trying to tell me something, but I didn't have a clue what it was.
So, super strength, remember?
Nope, You've lost me. Amina threw up her arms and let out a dramatic sigh.
Look, you punched a full-size man through a metal door, right?
Like I said, it was a lucky punch. That was...
Shut up, I'm not finished. Lucky punch or not, what you did shouldn't have been possible. Under any normal circumstances, a weakling like you, no offence, shouldn't have been able to do something like that.
She paused for a moment, letting her words sink in. Much as I'd have liked to, I couldn't argue.
Meaning that for a split second there, you used muscles you don't even have. For just that moment, you were strong. Super strong.
She gave the donkey statue a shove. It didn't budge.
Aren't you even a little curious how you did it?
Not really, no.
Liar, come on, have a go. See if you can lift it. It could come in handy for when your friend gets back on his feet.
She had a point. Something had happened to me when I'd run at Mr. Mumbles. Something I didn't remember ever feeling before. I thought about the tingling at the top of my spine, the feeling of electricity crackling across my skull. Something had definitely been happening to me. The question was, what? And then there was the other stuff, the light bulb which burst into life just when I'd needed it most, the axe which had appeared out of nowhere. And as for the shield, I decided to keep those bits to myself. Amina could have bumped into the light switch. The axe could have been there the whole time, for all I knew. And the shield... Okay, the shield was a little harder to find an explanation for. But given time, I'd think of one. It was all just a series of silly coincidences. There was nothing strange about it. Except that I'd hit Mr. Mumbles like an express train. There was no way of getting around that one. Okay, I nodded at last. Let's do it. Veins I didn't know existed bulged on my forearms, standing out like thick blue wires from the skin around them. The whole area from my wrists to my elbows felt as if it was being burned up from the inside. Any minute now, I half expected to see smoke pouring from my fingertips. Gritting my teeth, I dug my toes into the wooden floor and heaved harder until my entire body was trembling from the strain. I'd been telling myself for the past 5 minutes that I could do this, but it was starting to look as if I was wrong. Try as I might, I just couldn't budge the donkey.
Come on, put your back into it.
Amina barked. Easy for her to say. She was perched up on top of the nativity stable, one leg dangling over either side of the pointed roof. I am putting my back into it. It's no use. It's too heavy.
How hard could it really be to lift one little stone donkey?
You come down here and try it then, if you think it's so easy.
Ah...
She grinned.
But I'm not the one with magic mega muscles, am I?
Neither am I. It was just...
A lucky punch, yeah. So you keep saying.
She shuffled towards the front edge of the roof, then jumped down to join me. Careful! You nearly landed on the baby Jesus.
So? It's just a doll.
I know, but... It's probably unlucky or something. Amina looked at me. Her mouth curving into a smirk.
It's unlucky to jump off a shed and land on a doll.
Yeah, I nodded, convincing no one. If the doll's Jesus.
I see,
she replied.
I'll be sure to keep that in mind.
She gave the donkey statue a slap on the backside and winked at me.
Now, let's give this another go.
It's a waste of time. I can't lift it.
Then try harder. You must be doing something wrong.
Listening to you, that's what I'm doing wrong. I was annoyed enough that I couldn't move the thing. I didn't need her rubbing it in. I should be at the police station telling them everything, not here giving it Mr. Universe.
What? If you hadn't listened to me, you'd be dead by now.
Yeah. Well, I floundered, struggling to find a decent comeback. So?
So? That's the best you can come up with. So? You know what your problem is, Kyle? You've got no imagination.
No imagination? In case you've forgotten, something I imagined was just trying to murder us both. Imagination-wise, I'd say that's pretty bloody impressive, wouldn't you?
Then move the donkey!
But my imagination's got nothing to do with...
Move the donkey!
Fine, I'll move the damn... In a spectacular shower of dust and plaster, the statue of the donkey exploded before our eyes. I stood, rigid and staring, feeling tiny, invisible threads of electricity dart backwards across my head and down my neck. For a long time, there was no sound in the church, other than the echo of the explosion. Even the wind and rain appeared to pause in their onslaught. At last, the floor gave a faint creak as Amina nervously shifted her weight from one foot to the other. She brushed some stone dust from her hair.
Well,
she began.
I think we can safely consider the donkey moved.
I didn't reply. Instead, I closed my eyes and concentrated on the tingling sensation which still zapped through my scalp. It was a strange feeling. I'd thought it was completely new, but now I realised it wasn't completely unfamiliar. I'd felt it a few times that night, but it had been there maybe a dozen times in the months before then, lurking quietly at the back of my brain. If I could somehow hold on to it this time, somehow stop it slipping away, then maybe I could figure out what it was. The dim light behind my eyelids swirled in slow circles, reminding me of the satellite images of tornadoes I'd seen on the news. Every so often, a spark of white or blue would flash like a fish in a stream, before vanishing back down into the dark waters of my mind.
Kyle?
I heard Amina say, but I ignored her. When she spoke again, she sounded distant and garbled, as if talking on a radio that was tuned to two different stations at once. Whatever she was saying, it could wait. I focused on the flashes, trying to slow them down enough for me to see them properly. All the while, the electrical tingling crept through my hair. It had changed direction and was creeping forwards again, a silent predator edging closer and closer to the front of my head. A white spark shot past. A blue one passed by, slower, buzzing like a wasp. Flash! Blue again. This time I was too fast for it. As it sparked behind my eyes, I concentrated like I'd never concentrated before, focusing all my attention on that one tiny bright spot. The little blue lightning bolt buzzed angrily, trapped like an insect in a jar. It vibrated in the darkness, but it could struggle all it liked. It wasn't going anywhere. I'd done it. I'd managed to hold on to one of the sparks. I was just about to congratulate myself when the screaming started. It sounded frantic, deranged even, but it didn't sound like Amina. It didn't even sound human. My concentration broken, the blue flash zipped gratefully off into the darkness once more. I flicked open my eyes and gasped. There before me lay a vision of hell. Almost at once, the screaming stopped. I barely noticed it come to an end. Around me, the church stood in ruins. The imposing brick walls lay crumbled and wrecked, the stained glass windows shattered from their frames. Just moments ago, I had been standing on polished wood. but now a carpet of weeds and grass tangled around my feet. The chandeliers were gone. No surprise, as they no longer had a roof to hang from. Up above me, a billion unfamiliar stars looked down from a cloudless sky, occasionally winking, as if they all knew something I didn't. Amina. Where was Amina? She'd been there beside me, but now... I whispered her name into the darkness, but no reply came back. She wasn't here. I was on my own. Or was I? Through one of the gaps in the collapsed wall, I could see a street. Dark, misshapen figures skulked, stalked, and skittered back and forth across the road, illuminated here and there by the flickering flames of burning wreckage. Keeping low, I crept across to a mound of rubble, crouched down behind it, and peeked through a gap. None of the people... No, they weren't people. They couldn't be people. None of the things which were moving around outside seemed to know I was there. So, if I could stay out of sight for long enough, I might be able to figure out what the hell was going on. The street outside was the same one Amina and I had run along to get to the church. Only now, like the church itself, it was completely different. The houses which lined either side of the road had all been either boarded up or torn down. Those which were still standing appeared to throb and move as if alive. It was only when I looked more closely that I realised the effect was caused by hundreds of insect-like creatures, which crawled as one over every surface, poking and prodding at the barricaded windows as they tried to find a way in. The things out on the street, on the other hand, didn't seem to be moving with any shared purpose. Some seemed to be in an incredible hurry. They would appear from an alleyway on one side of the street, and then, in the blink of an eye, would disappear into another across the road. Other figures were in less of a rush. These ones took their time. They strolled lazily along the length of the street, stopping occasionally at the flaming remains of a car, warming themselves, or maybe just appreciating the destruction. Still, others were involved in brief violent battles which came out of nowhere. Groups of two or three of the creatures would suddenly lunge and begin tearing each other to pieces. I watched, dumbstruck, as one spindly figure was torn clean in half by two larger beasts. It thrashed and howled like a demon, and I realised this was the screaming I had heard just before I'd opened my eyes. What were they? I couldn't be sure. A lot of them were vaguely human-shaped, but even from this distance, it was clear that none of them were all the way human. They were either too large or too small, had too many arms, too many heads, or too many tails to qualify as a member of the human race. Some of them wore clothes, dirty, torn rags for the most part, serving very little purpose. The naked ones moved like animals, scurrying around on however many limbs they happened to have. Categorizing them like that was wrong, though. They couldn't be divided into humanoid and non-humanoid, or naked and clothed, or anything like that. They couldn't be categorized at all, because not one of them looked the same as the others. I saw one creature covered in thick, coarse hair, another with scaly skin that shimmered in the pale moonlight. Yet another slithered along the street, leaving a silvery, slug-like trail in its wake. They roared. They whispered. They hissed and howled. Some laughed. Others sobbed or snarled or screeched or screamed. Watching them, I realised there was one category they could all fit into. One word that could be used to describe them all. Hideous. Tears ran down my cheeks as I turned away and slunk down behind the rocks. What had happened? The church, the street, probably even the whole village, had been turned into some twisted, hellish version of itself. But how? And where was Amina? Was she here somewhere too? All those questions. So many questions which I couldn't answer. But there was another question too. One I hardly dare ask myself. Had I done this? Was it all somehow my fault? It couldn't be, I told myself. How could I have possibly done this? No matter how much I tried to convince myself, though, the thought remained, lurking quietly at the back of my mind. I decided that what I needed was a plan. Well, what I really needed was a miracle, but a plan would be the next best thing. If I had a plan, then I'd have something to focus on, other than the hundreds of creatures which lurked outside. First thing first, I had to find out if the rest of the village was like this too. Maybe whatever had happened was contained to just this one street. Maybe there were other people, real, normal people, just round the next corner. If I could find them, we could figure everything out together. So I had a plan. Although, admittedly, it wasn't without its problems. For starters, I could see thick plumes of greyish smoke billowing up from at least the next few streets over. That didn't bode well for the theory that it was only this one which had been affected by whatever was going on. The second, perhaps even bigger, flaw in the plan was that to get to the next street, I'd have to get past this one. And doing that may well put me into direct contact with the monstrous things roaming about. Still, my mind was made up. Flawed or not, it was the only plan I could think of, and anything was better than sitting here waiting to be found. Well, no, I could think of lots of things worse, but waiting to be found was still pretty grim. Moving as quickly as I dared, I crept on my hands and knees towards the back wall of the church, picking my path carefully through the overgrown undergrowth. Overhead, something swooped down low on large leathery wings. Not daring to look up, I listened to it circling round a few times before, with a low gargling sound, it continued on its way. The back of the church led out into the graveyard. Normally, going into a cemetery in the middle of the night would be near the bottom of my list of things to do, but, spooky as the graveyard might be, it wouldn't come close to what was going on at the front. When I reached the mound of bricks that used to be the back wall, I stopped and peeked outside. The graveyard was there, and, as I'd hoped, it was completely deserted. After pausing for a second to steady my nerves, I clambered over the rubble, slid down the other side, and began to run towards the wrought iron fence which surrounded the burial ground. The grass crunched underfoot as I ran, my shoes leaving imprints in the frost. I realised for the first time that it wasn't raining, and by the looks of things, it hadn't been for some time. Last I checked, it had been pouring for weeks. What was going on? There was no time to think about that now. Weaving and dodging past a dozen moss-covered headstones, I made it to the fence and squeezed myself sideways through a gap where a bar should have been. I emerged into a thick knot of trees. Their spindly branches scratched at my face as I pushed my way through the foliage. This wasn't right. The back of the graveyard should have brought me out onto Wilkinson Road. From there, I was only along two streets and up the hill to my house. So where had the trees come from? Why was there a forest where a road should have been? I pushed through the undergrowth and took a few hesitant steps forwards, trying to get my bearings. Before I could figure it all out, something lurking in the brush a short distance to my left gave a low, threatening growl. I hesitated. all my questions already forgotten, as my survival instincts debated over whether to stand still or make a run for it. With a faint rustle of leaves and a snapping of twigs, whatever was hidden in there began to creep closer. Slowly at first, then gradually faster, until I could see the grass being pushed aside in its wake. A low squat shape appeared briefly above the scrub, before ducking down again as it crashed towards me. Decision made. I turned on my heels and ran. Close behind, the unseen creature spat out an angry snarl and plunged after me, closing the gap with every step. The trees snagged and snared me as I fled, clawing at me, trying to slow me down. I threw up my arms to protect my face, but soon the palms of my hands were raw and bleeding from the forest's assault. A sound, somewhere between a bark and a squeal, snapped at my heels and I hurried on, forcing my aching legs to give me more speed. My muscles burned from the effort. But it wasn't enough. With a roar, the pursuing animal leapt onto my back, knocking me forwards. Sharp claws scraped across my flesh. I managed to cry out in pain and shock before I hit the ground in a clumsy forward roll. Our combined momentum carried both me and the creature on, flipping us over and trapping it beneath me. It shrieked and lashed out wildly, and I caught sight of a deformed clawed hoof as it swiped at my face. Hot, angry breath hit the back of my neck, and I imagined unseen jaws getting ready to snap shut. Quickly, I fired a sharp elbow at the beast. It howled and thrashed harder still. Again and again, I drove my elbows down into its twisting body, until with a damp crack, something inside it gave way. At once, the animal became less interested in attacking and more worried about getting out from under me. It kicked furiously with its back legs, pushing against the ground, trying to squeeze out from where I had it pinned. I wasn't about to argue. Leaping to my feet, I sprinted off through the forest, not chancing a look back at the shrieking, wounded beast I had left behind. Further and further I blundered into the woods, all sense of direction now long gone. Still I ran, stumbling through the dark, too afraid to stop in case another of the creatures found me. Something in the undergrowth hit me at around knee height, and I leapt backwards, fists raised, ready for anything. Almost anything. A moss-covered rectangle jutted up from the grass. It stood there, barely 3 feet high, still and silent, showing no sign of moving. Cautiously, I pulled aside some of the grass that was concealing the object. The moss came off in dirty clumps when I scraped at it, revealing a sheet of metal underneath. The metal looked as if it had once been white, but now was stained in streaks of greens and browns. I tore off another handful of the moss and revealed a large black letter W. More of the moss came away in my hand, uncovering other letters. Some were faded and peeling, but before long I was able to make out the entire sign. I stared down at it, shocked but not exactly surprised. Wilkinson Road. I knew it. I just wasn't sure why it was now buried under an acre of forest. I pushed on towards where I hoped my own street would be. Although the high trees on all sides meant I was working almost entirely on guesswork. Somewhere to my left, the screaming had started again, so I curved to the right, keeping as much distance from the sound as I could. And then suddenly, I was falling, rolling, tumbling out of the trees, down a steep embankment which had come at me out of nowhere. Desperately, I reached out, grabbing for something, anything, that would slow my descent. But any handhold I found slipped swiftly through my fingers. A split second before I hit it, I caught a glimpse of a dark pool of water. I barely had time to draw in a deep breath before I plunged below the still, stagnant surface. My heart thudded and my mind raced. Not water. Please, not water. I hate water. I hate it so much that just being close to it makes me want to throw up. Here, now, surrounded by it, sinking in it, a panic gripped me. My heart raced. My lungs burned holes in my chest. I kicked my legs, flailed my arms, desperately, frantically. But it was no use. The faint light rippling on the surface above me faded as I sunk down into the waiting depths. I was floundering so much, I barely noticed my feet touch the bottom. The ground was muddy and soft, but I was able to dig my toes into it until they found something solid. The water tried to force me back as I kicked upwards. I couldn't swim, but the kickoff had given me a good start. I clawed with my hands and thrashed with my legs until my head exploded up above the surface. The night air tasted smoky and bitter as I swallowed it down, but I didn't mind. I kicked my legs and managed to clumsily keep myself afloat long enough to take in my surroundings. The water was filling what looked like a man-made hole in the ground. The pit was rectangular, about the length and width of a bus. It could have been a small swimming pool, but who'd build a swimming pool here? I struggled over to the edge and hauled myself up onto the hard, uneven ground. I crawled on for several meters, trying to get as far from the water as I could. Finally, my exhausted arms gave out and I rolled onto my back. For a few long moments, I lay there, breathing heavily, gazing up at the unfamiliar night sky. My soaking body shook with the cold. The sharp ache from the scratches on my shoulders mixed with the dull throbs of my fall to form an all-encompassing wave of pain. I knew, though, that I didn't have time to sit around feeling sorry for myself. As quickly as I could manage, I drew myself up into a sitting position. A girl of around 5 years old stood before me, peering out from behind a curtain of long black hair. Her skin was pale, but caked with grime and muck. Her eyes appeared to be almost too large for her face. Two impossibly dark pools, boring a hole straight through me. Around each one was a dark smudge of eyeshadow. Across her lips was an uneven streak of red lipstick, childish attempts at looking like an adult. In her hands, she clutched a bundle of rags. No, not just rags. A doll made of rags. Scrawny arms and legs dangled down limply from its stuffed torso. Its head hung low, but as the girl stepped closer, I could have sworn the thing turned to look at me. A brief flash of a cracked porcelain face was all I saw, but it was enough to give me the willies.
"Have you seen Billy?"
the girl asked. Her voice was high and soft, but completely unafraid, which caught me off guard. "Billy?" I replied, unsure of what else to say. The only Billy I knew was Billy Gibb, a boy in my year in school who I really didn't get on with. She couldn't mean him, surely. I don't think so.
"Billy used to play with us,"
she continued, her gaze still fixed on me.
"But then he sent us away. He doesn't like us anymore."
"I'm sure that's not true," I said, edging backwards on my hands. "She was just a little girl, probably lost in this hellhole like me." But every time she spoke, it felt as if my skin was trying to crawl off my bones.
"Billy made me sad,"
sang the girl, swinging the doll back and forth by its arms. Every time it swung towards me, the head lifted enough for its eyes to meet mine.
When I get sad, Raggy Maggie gets very cross.
The girl's arms stopped, and the doll's pendulum movement slowed almost at once. Frowning, she lifted its mouth to her ear and listened, her stare never once shifting from me.
But he says he doesn't know where Billy is.
I watched, hypnotized, as she moved the doll's head up and down at her ear.
Well, no, I'm sure he wouldn't tell nasty lies to us, would you?
No, I stammered. I wanted to move, but something about the girl's stare had turned my arms and legs to lead.
Maggie has something she wants to tell you,
the girl whispered.
She says it's something very important.
She reached out her arm, holding the doll so its face was just centimetres from mine. Up close, it was even creepier than I'd first thought. Like the girl, the doll's face was pale white, but stained here and there by black and grey smudges of filth. Thin wisps of straw blonde were all that remained of its hair, dirty and matted and messy. A dark crack ran from the top of her ceramic head down through her left eye. Her one good eye seemed to follow me as I pulled away. A voice which wasn't her own suddenly came out of the girl's mouth, screechy and harsh, like fingernails being dragged down a blackboard. As the girl nodded the doll's head up and down, the doll's voice spoke three simple words.
He's behind you. He's behind you.
I turned, spinning up onto my knees, half expecting Mr. Mumbles to come leering at me from the shadows. Instead, a middle-aged man with dark hair and smiling brown eyes extended a hand towards me, palm upwards, as if to help me up. I looked at him suspiciously. He was human, at least. That was something. And his smile appeared genuine. Cautiously, I placed my hand in his. His grip was as strong as his skin was rough, and he lifted me to my feet with no effort at all. Even standing, I fell a good few centimetres short of the man's shoulders. He towered above me, big and broad beneath his red-checked lumberjack shirt, like a rugby player. Despite the man's size, for the first time in hours, I didn't feel threatened or afraid.
Hey, kiddo,
he smiled, looking me up and down.
Maybe I'm wrong, but it looks to me like you're a long way from home.
Dunno. I'm not sure.
Trust me, you are.
I nodded, not really wanting to argue.
Good job I found you when I did. There's some nasty things out there.
I suddenly remembered the girl. When I turned round, she was nowhere to be seen. There was a girl. A little girl. With a doll.
Ah, that would be Caddy,
the man said, nodding solemnly.
One of them nasty things I was just talking about. Best avoided.
I glanced back at the spot where Caddy had stood and felt an icy shiver travel the length of my spine. I will.
She's not the worst. Well, it's probably just easier and safer all round if you keep out of her way.
I nodded. He didn't have to tell me twice. I'd be happy never seeing the girl again. Where? What is this place? I asked, taking in my new surroundings for the first time. The pool of water was a few feet behind the man. Beyond that was the hill I'd rolled down. The forest stood at the top of it, ominous and silent. Around me seemed to be nothing but waste ground. Dark, oily puddles pitted the soil like blackheads, Mounds of scrap wood and metal lay abandoned all around, some scorched and burned, others presumably just waiting to be.
The darkest corners.
The what?
The darkest corners. Charming, isn't it?
I've never heard of it, I replied, shaking my head.
Not many have.
He hooked his thumbs through the belt loops of his jeans and leaned back on his heels.
In fact, apart from those living here, I'd say you're probably the first.
But... My mind raced with a thousand questions, none of which wanted to wait their turn. I don't get it. At first I thought it was my village, but then, I mean now, I don't know.
Yeah, it can be confusing like that. I remember my first visit. Not nice. Brought on a panic attack that lasted about a four.
A strangled hiss from nearby broke his sentence in two. He held up a hand for silence and listened to the whistling of the wind. Though the sound didn't come again, his face remained grave with concern.
It's not safe out here for you. You best come with me.
He led me across the waste ground, speaking only twice to warn me of possible danger ahead. Both times nothing materialized, and soon we were sneaking along the side of a low stone building with barricaded windows and boarded up doors. At the third or fourth window, the man stopped. He told me to keep my eyes open for danger. Then he knocked out a complex series of beats on the wooden planks. To begin with, I didn't think anything was happening. We stood there, close together, neither one of us saying a word. Eventually, I could hear the sound of footsteps within the building, drawing closer. After a few seconds, a dozen or more bolts were slid noisily back, and the entire window blockade swung inwards.
Go,
the man nodded, stepping aside to let me through. I pulled myself in through the gap and began to slide head first towards the floor on the other side. Just before I hit the ground, a hand caught me by the arm. It dragged me away from the window, hauling me upright as it did. I found myself looking at a hooded figure, just slightly taller than myself. The person underneath had their head and face hidden beneath a long, flowing robe, and I couldn't even tell if they were male or female.
See the window,
the man who had helped me said, sliding down through the barricade behind me. The robed figure nodded and immediately set about fixing the boards back into place.
The things out there don't usually attack here, but with you inside, I can't be sure. You'd be a prize catch.
I followed behind him as he began to march off along the wide corridor, which was lit at irregular intervals by tall, floor-standing gas lamps. Beneath my feet, the dusty carpet felt threadbare and thin and made a sound like foop, foop, foop as we walked along it. What are those things, anyway? I asked. I felt better when I was talking. Talking left less time to think. They didn't even look human.
That's because they aren't human. Never have been. Most of them are nothing more than shadows. Ghosts of the past. All of them are lost. Neglected. Forgotten.
He spat out that last word, as if it had left a foul taste in his mouth. I see, I nodded, despite the fact I didn't have the faintest idea what he was on about.
You don't have the faintest idea what I'm on about, do you?
I stopped for a moment, shocked, then doubled my pace in order to catch up with him again. How did you do that?
Do what?
How did you know what I was thinking? You read my mind.
Oh, well now, that's hardly any great achievement here, of all places, is it?
Before I could question any further, he pushed open a heavy wooden door and stepped inside. I followed him through, and we emerged into a startlingly familiar room. This, I muttered, looking around at my own carpet, my own curtains, my own bed. But this is my room.
An impression of it, anyway.
The man nodded, sitting on my bed. He leaned back, shook his head once, and smiled at me.
I gotta tell you, kiddo, I can't believe you're actually here. I mean, I knew you were going to be powerful, but to make it here without any help, without any practice, that's something.
I frowned. The man was making less and less sense every time he opened his mouth. Sorry? I said. I don't know what you mean.
Okay, so not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but powerful, you bet.
He leaned forwards, so he was perching right on the edge of the bed.
I'm telling you, I've got a great feeling about this, Kyle.
The last word hung there in the air, flashing a furious red. How do you know my name?
I know all there is to know about you, Kyle.
Suddenly his smile didn't seem quite so friendly anymore, and the room, familiar as it was, no longer felt safe.
Tell me, how did you like the present I sent you?
What present?
The present!
He stepped closer, excitement blazing behind his eyes, and clamped his big hands onto my arms. It didn't hurt, but it felt like it could if he wanted it.
The best present you've ever had. The last present you'll ever get.
I don't know what...
What was it you called him again?
His grip on me tightened just a fraction.
Oh, yes. Mr. Mumbles.
At the mention of the name, my not-quite-bedroom began to spin around me. I swallowed, but my mouth and throat felt desert dry. What did you say?
Wow, that guy hates you. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not exactly your number one fan either, but Mumbles, man, does he have a grudge. Of course, can't say I blame him the way you treated him.
Who are you?
If only you knew.
He let go of my arms and turned away. Tell me.
Consider me a teacher.
The smile was gone from his face now, and his expression was cold and stern.
And think of Mr. Mumbles as your first lesson. If you can beat him, and I'll be honest, dear Kyle, I don't see that happening. But if you can beat him, you'll pass the test. And we move on to lesson two. Pass all the tests, and maybe, maybe, you'll be worthy.
I wasn't sure I wanted to know the answer, but I had to ask. Worthy of what? His eyes glinted as he leaned his face in close to mine.
Worthy of helping me bring about the end of your world.
My eyes flicked everywhere around his face, unable to hold his gaze. What do you mean?
You know what? Fun as this has been, I'm bored now. It's just the same questions with you, over and over, isn't it? So if you'll just...
He caught me by the shoulders again, and spun me around so my back was to him. In the doorway, the hooded figure held up a small wooden box. It gave an almost inaudible squeal, then nearly blinded me with a powerful flash of white light.
Great stuff. Now, get out of my house.
What? I stammered. But it's... He ran at me, a blaze of fury, the sinews on his neck sticking out like thick red ropes.
Get out of my house!
I opened my eyes with a start and found Amina staring down at me, her face a mask of concern. I heard her sigh with relief when she saw that I was awake.
Don't do that to me! You're such a freak!
Do what? I muttered, trying to get to grips with my surroundings. I could feel cool, varnished wood at my back. Overhead, a chandelier swung gently back and forth on a current of invisible drafts. I was in the church. The real church. Thank God.
Pass out?
Now, how did you do that?
Do what? I frowned. I sat up and immediately wished I hadn't. The world lurched and spun, and I spent the next few seconds swallowing back at least 3 mouthfuls of sick.
You blew up the donkey! It was amazing!
When I could focus properly, I looked up at the nativity display. The donkey was gone, replaced by a mound of dust and chunks of stone. The donkey. I blew up the donkey.
You did! You really did! 1 minute it was there, the next it was like kaboom!
She was bobbing excitedly from foot to foot.
How did you do it?
I don't know. I didn't mean to, I replied. I hadn't meant to blow it up, but that didn't change the fact that I had. A shiver travelled the length of my spine.
Are you okay?
Amina asked. I felt for the scratches the beast had dug into my back, but found none. Fine. I think I just had the weirdest dream, I said at last.
I get that a lot. One time I dreamt I was an egg. Just like a big egg, but with a face and arms and stuff. And bees kept chasing me. Big, angry bees. What do you think that means?
Run, I hissed.
I tried, but it's not easy when you're a giant egg.
Run! I shouted, scrabbling to my feet. I caught hold of her arm and pulled her with me towards the exit, barely letting her feet touch the ground. At the far end of the church, a dark figure hung limply from the statue of the cross, arms outstretched in the classic crucifixion pose. As we fled, it raised its head, scowled, and spat at us through swollen, stitched-up lips.